You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
There was a British comedian, I can't remember his name, but he would do this thing where there's wrong the phone, and he would go on stage as if there's a loose wire, and he would pretend that there's a loose wire, which is just so apt for Zoom calls and broadband. I don't know why it's called broadband. It's about as broad as a thing that's not broad.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's how I get rid of telemarketers too, you know.
That's a whole thing. Dealing with telemarketers is a whole science, isn't it? There's all this stuff on YouTube about how people have tracked down. I think scammers and telemarketers are obviously very different people, but there's all these scammers that call you up claiming that your computer's blown up and that they're going to fix it for you. But
yep. I've had my number out on enough websites and podcasts and stuff to where I am inundated with those types of calls. So I would highly recommend an app called, it's called RoboKiller. And I think I pay, it's like $20 a year or something like that. And it has a database of millions of phone numbers that are reportedly scams or even telemarketers.
Presumably from the dark web. Poacher turned gamekeeper, yes.
It'll actually pick up the phone for you and play recordings to them. So it also wastes their time. It's mostly built for scams. And then it actually records that hilarious conversation for you so you can go back and enjoy it later. So for the longest time, I had a recording that all it was some random guy on my end that'd pick up the phone and all they hear is like, hello, hello. Yes. Hello. And you get some guy on the end, just like, hello, Mr. Ginger. Like, you know, I wanted to, you know, trying to sell me something. Right.
Just, yeah. And you can tell because you pause when you pick up the phone, there's that pause as like the systems on their end are busy connecting you through to the available. Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know, I don't know. But anyway, we need these people. So Kylon, I just need to say one thing to everyone. And that is that you play the drums in a rock band. And so therefore everything else is kind of irrelevant.
That's true.
and everything else is really just passing the time and paying for the ability to travel and play great music.
That is exactly correct, man. That is number one priority all the time. Every business I buy and build, it's just to buy bigger and better drum sets, you know.
Which is an affliction, frankly. And as the owner of a Roland electronic drum kit, which I am
very nice,
still completely unable to play. So I just give it to my children and demand that they learn to play the drums because that is the only thing that actually counts. You know, again, everything else is secondary. You know, guitars and vocals is really there just to, I suppose, just fill space really more than anything else.
It's true, man. Oh, I'm obviously the most important instrument in the band. That's funny. I was just telling my wife yesterday I need to get one of those electric sets because I'm standing in a home we just bought and we're kind of remodeling. You can see the amazing popcorn ceiling there that we're in the process of scraping off. But we just semi-moved here to Missoula, Montana from Washington State. And I left my real kit, drum kit, back at home. And now I'm here with nothing to hit. And I got to get one of those electric ones. And there's our neighbor actually right across from us. He's got a band. And literally, I can almost reach out and touch his shed from here that they go and practice in. And they need a drummer. And it's just a perfect setup. We found that all out yesterday. So
it is good. It's like this thing where in business, you can hide behind various sort of personas and emails and things. But when it comes to stuff like, it's a bit like sports, isn't it? You cannot hide. Well, I suppose you probably could plug in some sort of sample tune and pretend that you're hitting. But when I was watching this thing about Led Zeppelin, this documentary about John Bonham, and I was thinking, God, if I had my time again, you know, I would just play that, just become the best drum. Bill Bruford from, can't remember what they're called now, a group, but just fantastic drummers. But anyway, we're not digressing. This is actually the main subject of the conversation here. I mean, business stuff can wait, but we probably should sort of get into the business. And you seem to have a habit of buying businesses.
Yes.
Is that a fair assertion?
Very fair. Yeah.
So you've actually recognized this illness and you've actually called the company Acquirer just to acknowledge the fact that this is something that you do appreciate that you do. And what's the strategy? I can see from the website that there is clearly a plan, like a roll-up strategy. But tell us a bit about that. Is that the most relevant thing to talk about, do you think, in terms of, you know, the business side?
Yeah, I'd probably say so. What Acquirer does is we help people buy businesses. And then we are buying businesses ourselves, obviously. And I'm even building a personal portfolio. That's it in a nutshell. The reason for starting the company and why there's opportunity out there is because I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, quick Google search will tell you, we have this massive wave of the baby boomer generation retiring. Yeah. And they own the majority of small businesses in America. They're the backbone of America. They employ millions of people. And it's trillions of dollars worth of small business assets that need to switch hands over the next decade as these folks retire. So yeah. There's a decent amount of kind of small business supply and people looking to get out. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are starting to be turned on to this idea of acquisition entrepreneurship now. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. A few years ago when we started doing this, very few people that had heard about acquisition entrepreneurship, but everybody's familiar with startup entrepreneurship or buying and flipping a house or buying and fixing a house and holding it for future cash flow. This is the same idea, but for existing businesses. But it is a long and a complex process. And also anybody can buy a business, even though that's got your hurdles to get through. But once you have the business, you know, how do you optimize and grow it? So Acquirer kind of helps people A to Z through that whole process over a multi-year relationship, basically.
And so the challenge for you, I guess, is you've got two sides of the equation. You've got the buyer and the seller. Your role changes because, first of all, to find the correct acquisition target, you put your investor hat on, presumably, and you say, is this something that I would invest in? And then from the entrepreneur's perspective, you have to put on your company hat and say, is this someone that I think is going to fit with this business? And in other words, if you mismatch, if you don't have that right correlation of skills and desire and knowledge, I suppose, then the transaction, doesn't matter how successful the business is very easy to become unsuccessful very quickly. So,
oh, dude. Yeah.
How did this start? In other words, what was the genesis of this concept? Because clearly you start with one idea, I would imagine, and then you sort of build a business out of that. Is that how it started for you?
Acquirer specifically?
Yeah, I think, well, just this concept of matching, of looking at entrepreneurship through a different lens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really just started out of that need, right? Like these businesses are coming online and they need to sell regardless. And what we saw was a pretty severe, first of all, just lack of general knowledge on business acquisition was even a thing for the average person that has some business experience and some capital and wants to own their own business. Everybody's thinking of starting a business, but then, so there's the lack of knowledge there. And then also like lack of capital and just specific know-how. So Acquirer sort of arose from that gap in the market we saw. And, you know, in the last year, we've helped around, it's probably close to 400 folks now on their business buying journey. It's been a lot of fun.
And do you find that rather than, it's a bit like when you're trying to buy off-market properties, in, you know, in real estate, do you find that you're looking now to target specific businesses almost as if you're a VC or an investor where you're saying, we like your business. Do you want partners? Do you want new blood? Is that, are you expanding that way?
Yeah. So if you want to break deal flow down into a couple of buckets, really the only two, there's on-market and off-market deal flow. I'd say the majority of businesses that we're, at least folks we work with, look at and buy, they come through business brokers. You know, they're brokered, but that in itself is a very fragmented industry. Not all brokers are created equal. There's a lot of consolidation to be done there, honestly. And then the other bucket is off-market deals, as you mentioned. There's pros and cons to both, right? Obviously, major pro to off-market is you can be the only buyer at the table. You don't have that buyer competition and you can not have a middleman and connect directly with the seller. Cons are, can be really difficult to find off-market deals. You're calling up businesses. You got to be kind of high EQ, you know, emotional intelligence. You've got to like cold calling. And then once you get a hold of somebody who's interested in selling, these folks have never been through this process. Their finances are messy. There's even a whole education process around what their business is actually worth, that it's not worth 20 times revenue, that it's worth more like 3-4 times EBITDA, right? So there's pros and cons to both. We do a lot of off-market deal flow and can help folks with that.
Exactly. Have you found as you've developed the business that there's a, I wouldn't say spin-off, but there's these sort of additional possibilities for you to not do a complete sale, but do a partnership where you're bringing in new capital, new partners, where the existing owner takes a step back? You may have a, you're just bringing in new lease of life, as it were.
Yeah, there's like a growth for equity model. There's a few different ways to think about that that we've done. In fact, you know, I mentioned I just moved here to Missoula, Montana. It's because I did exactly that. I personally bought a plumbing company. Well, I bought 80% of a plumbing company, and the previous owners, they're still on the org chart. They still work in the business and they retain 20%.
Yes.
And so I've been working in tandem with them for about 4 or 5 months now. There's pros and cons to that. Fortunately, in this case, there's been a lot more pros, and we have a great working relationship, and together we're building this business. But that's not super typical situation, I'd say, simply because most owners are looking to, they're either burnt out or they're looking to retire. So they typically just want out, right? In this case, these owners were, they've still got, you know, a couple decades left where they want to be entrepreneurial and build something. Frankly, they were just a bit burnt out. Yeah. They'd started this thing 15 years ago, got it to a certain point, and they just simply don't know how to grow it. They've just created a full-time job for them. And yes. So me coming on board, we're scaling this thing now. And actually, I was just telling my wife yesterday, I'm so stoked because this last couple of weeks, I've been able to get them out of a bunch of tasks and things that were just eating up all their time that they hated doing. And now they're having fun again in the business. So that's super fun for me to experience.
And that's great. So it's almost like a business recovery process as well. So are you looking for businesses where it's just a straightforward handover, so you're looking at cash flow, and or are you looking for undervalued businesses where the owners have become too embroiled in the business, where they, you know, they run the business rather than manage? So you know what I mean, where they end up spending all their time as effectively an owner manager rather than working on the business?
Yeah, I mean, to be quite honest, that describes like 98% of these small businesses, right? And small businesses meaning we're talking revenues between 1 and 10 million and EBITDA between, you know, a quarter of a million to a million, yes, basically. And employees anywhere from, you know, 4 to 50 employees. Those types of businesses, almost always the owner is still very significantly involved. They're a key man in a lot of areas. And so that's the typical situation.
And that presumably leads to burnout. So I think one of the biggest issues running your own business as a small business owner or as an entrepreneur is losing perspective. In other words, figuring out that being busy each day and doing stuff is not necessarily the best use of your time. Mm-hmm. And in terms of your success rate, I mean, obviously, you're not going to get every deal you want. But following on for that, do you see yourself growing the business and providing consultancy services effectively where you come across these businesses, you see these issues over and over again? So is that another potential revenue stream for you?
Yeah, and that's essentially Acquire's business model in a lot of ways. We look for folks that are interested in business buying. It's a long and a complex process. There's a lot of kind of mystery involved. And we essentially partner with them. They go through a couple programs first, and we have a lot of training and everything. But at the end of the day, our model is to actually invest in the deal alongside them so that post-acquisition, we can be that sort of board of directors, mentor, you know, consultancy, if you will, to help them grow and optimize the business. And then the more businesses we work with, the more experience we're getting and the more we're taking that and putting that into better packaged training and systems to where, you know, somebody buys a business, we can kind of hand over a thumb drive. Here's a bunch of systems and, you know, pick and choose.
Exactly. So I know you mentioned that in some of the talk about systemization. And again, this is a common thread really where companies that grow from an idea or grow from a concept. One of the guests that I had on was a specialist in outsourced personnel, but with that, they also brought systems and processes so that those personnel could not just be dropped into like a random environment, you know, that they could actually bring structure. So again, tell me more about what you see. I mean, from your helicopter view, dealing with all these businesses, what are the problems that just leap out of the page time and time again?
Well, we could talk for quite a long time on that. I mean, I can speak, it might be best to give some specific examples for the business that I'm directly involved in right now that I just added to the portfolio, because I would say this also describes 90% of other businesses, right? But it's things like severely under-optimized in terms of new technology, right? Yep. Things, many of these businesses, things are still pen and paper. So bringing in software, kind of ERP can help streamline things quite a bit. No clear roles or organization in the organization whatsoever. People are just sort of doing things in the organization because they want to or they're good at it. Even if they don't want to, you have multiple people in one role, right? Which is a big no-no. Yeah. Lack of documented systems, right? Which causes an inability to grow or scale fast. You know, you hire one new guy and it takes five times as long to train them. I could go on and on.
You know, with businesses, to a certain extent, you invest in the people, but you've got to have a real leap of faith to be able to see the opportunity beyond that. Because if you've got a business that's still running analog systems, where you've got the owner is the head chef and chief bottle washer at the same time. Isn't that a business that you actually want to run away from very quickly? How do you spot, the diamonds or in the rough?
That's not necessarily a business that you need to run away from. You just need to understand those risks and understand how you're going to mitigate against them, right? So the business owner you described is, we would call that in our diligence process, that's a key man risk right there, right? Like I have another deal that I'm post LOI on now. It's a much larger HVAC company and they do a lot of large construction work. The owner is pretty much his main job there. He's the estimator and he holds some very key relationships with large general contractors that provide 50% of the revenue that comes into the company, right? So that's not something that I necessarily, that's not a deal killer, but in Acquira's book, we would call that a yellow flag. You know, we've got red flags, which are too many red flags. That's a deal killer. We've got black flags. One of those is a deal killer. A black flag, a good example would be a business that has more than 30% of its revenue coming from a single source.
Yep.
You've just got too big of a potential failure there if that goes away. Right. So, this to me is like a more of a yellow flag, right? There's some very easy ways for those relationships to be passed off to me. And I feel quite confident in my people skills and ability to develop those relationships. And then there's a, transition period that we have put into the asset purchase agreement, right? That will help mitigate that as well. The owner will stay fairly involved. So these are things you just have to think about and there's different ways to mitigate them. I'd say, something that often people overlook because you're talking about people, right? And you know, to me, the root of any business, business is all about people and relationships at the end of the day. It really is. And so culture is a very important thing to be doing your diligence on as well. And that's tough because a lot of these sellers, they don't want you to come in as a new buyer prior to the sale and talk. They don't want their team to know they're selling.
I just have visions of like episode after episode of The Office, So from an entrepreneur's perspective, the wheels are turning here actually, because if you have the beginnings of a business, or let's say as an entrepreneur, one has a business that one's built and you still have passion for your business, one of the ways to grow it is through organic growth, but the other way is through acquisition. So what areas do you specialize in, both in terms of geography and in terms of, are there specific business types that you tend to sort of hone in on?
Growth through acquisition, again, something not a lot of folks think about, but it's a very good way to grow your existing company or startup. In terms of industry location, we're pretty much US focused. A lot of that is because one of our primary funding sources for getting these deals done are SBA loans. And so these businesses, you need to be US based, you need to be a US citizen or resident. In terms of industry, honestly, I mean, we've looked at hundreds and hundreds of deals. We have experience in a lot of different industries and there's businesses in all sorts of industries that I think are great.
Yes.
Where we are particularly focused though, and the industries we like are home services. So things like plumbing companies, that's what I have here, HVAC, roofing, moving companies, landscaping, pest control. Particularly, we really do like HVAC, plumbing, and roofing these days. And
yes, it's interesting because, again, I was talking to someone about solar companies because, I mean, that sort of falls somewhere between the cracks of, service and, general contracting, as it were. Do you see yourself, with the knowledge that you have, moving in and being able to actually take over, not an industry, but just make some significant changes? And again, if you take solar as an example, it's a very, people talk about solar cowboys and it's not terribly regulated. There's not homogenous, as it were, where you've got different deals in different states. And do you see yourself with your investors moving into a particular area and sort of colonizing that?
Yes. And right now it is in some of those specific industries I mentioned, like plumbing, roofing, HVAC. That's funny you mentioned solar too, because I recently talked to one of our acquisition entrepreneurs in our program, and he owns a solar company, and he specifically joined to grow that company through acquisition of roofing companies.
Yes.
And then basically cross-sell to customers. But yeah, we're certainly seeing, so for instance, HVAC, right? We're not the only ones who are attracted to HVAC. That private equity discovered that year and a half ago. So we're actually seeing kind of the multiples for those businesses start to expand a bit. You know, they're getting more expensive. But yeah, that industry is certainly changing in terms of it's being consolidated. Like, even people listening at home can probably, if you've had somebody come look at your HVAC system, you'll notice more and more these companies are getting more tech savvy. The technicians are showing up with iPads. Probably pricing is changing. Probably people moving to flat rate. Pricing's going up because actual business-minded people are focusing on these and optimizing pricing. So yeah, these industries are changing. They're being updated, really, from when they were started 2-3 decades ago. Yeah.
And you're working typically on a one-to-one basis, you know, if I were to put it simply. And what I mean by that is you've got an entrepreneur comes to you and says, I want to buy a business in this space. And then you will find something that suits him in terms of his potential investment and geographic location and other criteria. Is that a fair sort of description of the model at the moment?
The one correction I would make is we help them do it. We don't like to call ourselves kind of a done-for-you service. It's a do-it-yourself service. But what you're entering into with Aquira is it's an ecosystem where you have the vendors, the tools. And when I say vendors, I mean for legal diligence, you know, that you have the tools, the training, and our team and a community of other folks on the same journey to kind of draw from to do it yourself, right? We actually had that model where people paid us a lot more and we did everything for them. And what you quickly discover is you don't know if you have the right people. You'd mentioned earlier that it must be an interesting task to try to find the right people to partner with, to buy businesses and then find the right business. And it is, it's not everybody's cut out for buying a business. And so we kind of switch things around to where, hey, here's a giant kind of data and resource dump on everything you need. Here's accountability and a structure and our phone number, but you have to go out and do the work. And it is a lot of work. But at the end of the day, when we're reaching the finish line on a deal, and this is a multi-month process, that person has shown, that acquisition entrepreneur we've worked with has shown a lot of grit, determination, problem solving, critical thinking, conscientiousness. And that's when we know, hey, we'd like to invest in this person and kind of own the deal together and work to optimize and grow this
business.
The
important thing, isn't it? Because you continue on as an equity owner after the transaction. So you get the benefit of the upside of your ongoing support and knowledge. So my next question really have you considered, with the experience and knowledge that you've gained in these various different sectors, some sort of strategy which goes beyond this sort of one-to-one relationship where you create an entity that is effectively a roll-up of all of these businesses? So rather than you finding businesses for someone else, are you looking at saying, let's find something for ourselves, let's collect all of these businesses, put it into an entity, and then get the economies of scale of that?
Yeah, that is a strategy that we're currently doing. Like, as a company, Aquira is, specifically in home services. We have our own wholly owned and operated deals that we're rolling up. I'm doing it personally, and a lot of our acquisition entrepreneurs are doing that as well. Some people, they want to do one deal, hold that thing and grow it over 20 years, or grow it 3-4 years and then sell it for more than they paid for it. But a lot of folks are going for kind of a roll up and a bit of a consolidation strategy, which is smart because you get that sort of multiple arbitrage. You're buying all these businesses at 3-4 times earnings. And once you get a certain amount of, it's several million, at least, EBITDA under control, now those multiples expand, the market will pay more like 6, 8, 9, 10 times those earnings, right? So you're kind of creating that wealth out of thin air. So that's a great strategy to go with. And yeah, we have experience in that.
And do you see that the impact of COVID has really shaken out a lot of these businesses? So people have now, it's a two-part question. First of all, is there more inventory available because of COVID? And secondly, you mentioned that hedge funds are looking at HVAC companies. Is there a move, do you see, from investors generally to more traditional sort of types of business?
Yes. Less inventory. I can't really speak to that. Certainly when COVID started and everybody was really freaking out, a lot of sellers pulled the deals off the market and a lot of numbers tanked, right? We're still not obviously trying to buy any restaurants or like concert venues or cruise ships, anything like that. But to be honest, the market came back pretty quick. And if anything, it's one of the reasons we're interested in home services, I've looked at dozens and dozens of P&Ls from home services companies, and they're all very strong through COVID. Some have taken a little bit of a dip here and there, but for the most part, compared to many other industries, that they're incredibly strong. And there's Yelp put out a report that showed data on this. BizBuySell.com put out a report that showed data on this. BizBuySell is kind of the Zillow for businesses for sale out there. But home services did very strong. And it's because people were at home, and I own a plumbing company. People don't really appreciate the plumbing in their home, but it's probably the utility they use the most. Yes. And if you have a broken toilet or something, like, you're going to spend that discretionary income. You're not going to go on vacation. You're going to get that thing fixed. It's an urgent, active problem. Yes. And so that's why we like these businesses, and they did fairly strongly. And why I think a lot of large strategic firms are starting to look at these more traditional, sort of boring, unsexy businesses, right?
How did you get into this? I mean, I don't mean it sort of a trite question, but what was the pathway that took you to create Acquirer? And, obviously finding the investment partners that you're working with. I'd like to hear a bit more about how that came about.
Yeah, the short story is, personally, I've been starting businesses all of my life. I started a painting company, started a couple other businesses after I got out of the Navy in 2012. Eventually sold those. I've been through the startup game, and I eventually got hooked up with the founders of Acquirer, Hayden and Devin. And you can go on Acquirer.com and kind of look at our team and stuff and see the bios. But at the time that I started talking with them, they were buying online companies. They were buying blogs, e-commerce, SaaS companies, stuff like that. I got hooked up with them, was running one of the companies in their portfolio, and we started talking about it more and realized, hey, this acquisition thing, it's kind of a good idea. And also, let's look into doing this with brick and mortar businesses. And more of those are coming online as people are retiring and stuff. And then we noticed that kind of gap in the market where we threw out, did the Jim Collins kind of bullets before cannonball, threw out a couple MVPs and realized, hey, there's a lot of folks out there that want to buy these businesses, but they don't have the know-how. They want somebody to kind of hold their hand, the capital. And that's, we started Acquirer, and it's going to be going pretty well.
And what's the appetite? Because you mentioned that each deal that you do, or in many deals as you do, you come in as a partner or co-investor. Mm-hmm. What's the appetite from investors, and how do you think that that's changed over the last couple of years?
The appetite for investors
for co-investing alongside you. So are you looking to build a large portfolio
of minority held positions and businesses? Yeah. I mean, we are a true minority partner. If we do come in as an equity partner, we're never more than 30%. And in many cases, we do just 20%.
Yeah.
And the appetite's fairly strong. It's optional for us to invest in the deal with you, right? You can take our resources and buy a business and then run with it by yourself. But if you do want that experienced partner, we are open to putting our own capital in the deal, and that aligns incentives. And a lot of people are very open to that, but it ends up being a pretty individualized conversation, right? Every business is different. Every partnership is different. But at the end of the day, we are true minority partners. We serve as more like a board of directors. We're not involved in the operations. We give you what you need to make the thing successful and give you a bit of a roadmap, right?
And have you stumbled across, and I probably can guess what your answer is going to be, but have you stumbled across a particular sector or industry where you've gone, hang on, this is massively undervalued? Let's fill our boots with this as much as we can. I mean, obviously, why would you want to disclose that? Because if that's your sort of, but you know what I mean? Have you come across these sort of surprises, pleasant surprises?
Yeah, like the most recent was, well, first it was HVAC, to be quite honest. And that was back in 2019. But now every other private equity firm is sort of pursuing that. So then it was plumbing. And I'd say they're still, largely undiscovered, but that's becoming more discovered. And actually roofing is something that we're really into right now. And then, I was on a podcast the other day, and that host mentioned some friends he has that have done really well acquiring home foundation remediation specialists or restoration, specialists, which I think is brilliant. Again, it's one of those sort of, that's a high ticket business. It's something that people can't do themselves. It's an urgent active problem. You're buying a house, you get an inspection, there's a giant crack in your foundation. You got to get it fixed. Or it won't get, the bank won't fund it. That's something that I'm going to dig into a little bit more as well. I'm fine to give those secrets out, man, because I can tell you where there's opportunity, but it's a whole other thing to actually pursue it and close the deal.
Exactly. Everyone has ideas, but, the trick is the execution. Yep. And if you were to fast forward, let's say 3 years from today, I mean, do you see Acquirer as being the main vehicle? In other words, will Acquirer itself become an operating company, do you think?
We already are in some respects, at least, you know, subsidiaries and parent companies of us are, because we have our own wholly owned yes. operated portfolio. But in general, strictly speaking about Acquira, and I'm speaking more to our team, like our team yes. has a lot of operations experience. Acquira, we prefer to stick to being a training company, really. We're really good at that. We're really good at marketing. So we're good at attracting the right audience to us and then training them very well. And we're good at investing, right? So that's why, you know, our little kind of slogan is, you know, we're Acquira and we are an investment fund and an accelerator kind of slash, you know, training ground for acquisition entrepreneurs. That's what we'd kind of prefer to be as time goes on.
And do you see yourself going further upstream, as it were, when you talk about acceleration, you know, having an accelerator, as it were? Do you see yourself investing more in earlier stage businesses, depending on the entrepreneurs are and who they are and how good you think they are?
It's a great question, man. You know, we've talked about it a lot. Frankly, I don't see it. Y Combinator. And,
have you been vaccinated against, you know, startup businesses?
Basically, yeah, that's kind of where I'm going with it. Like, I know personally, after, you know, buying a business, I'll never go back to starting a business again. Like when yes. you can just buy it, it's a hack. It almost feels illegal sometimes to just, you know, cut in line in that entrepreneurial process
yeah.
to skip the years of blood, sweat, and tears building something from scratch, proving the market. Of course, that's fun. Some people really enjoy it. I do. But now I'm at a stage in life where I love the business of business, but, you know, I really like... It's a weird thing, man, buying a business and stepping in, and I don't have to worry about customers. I get to go straight into making
sure
that's the
right team. You just have different challenges, don't you? You have yeah. customer retention issues, and presumably you've got personality yeah. issues. So when the owner leaves, there's a certain amount of something with the company that leaves with him. So I think there are different challenges as opposed to, they're not all slam dunks, I don't think.
There are. You know, and that's what I mean, but it's, you know, having started a lot of business, it's a different muscle I'm having to flex right off yes. the bat, right? That's interesting.
But I guess this is where scale comes in. So for, you know, entrepreneurs or business owners that are looking to grow, and buying a business, I guess, just gives you a different perspective, because that business, if it's in your own industry, has been run by someone else in a very different way. So you can learn from that. So it doesn't just bring you extra customers or extra revenues. It probably brings you different ideas and a different way of doing things.
It does. And on the flip side too, I've felt very advantaged coming into plumbing company with no experience running plumbing companies. And that, you know, they've been doing things the same way for years, and I'm able to immediately see things in a completely different light. Yes. and really think outside of the box. And it's really made us successful in a lot of areas. And, you know, it's always a challenge to bring something completely new and unheard of to people that have been doing something the same way. And we went through, I mean, we just finished overhauling the entire business, all of our systems, and implemented an end-to-end software. Like, the entire business runs on the software. The main benefit there is it gives me data.
Yes.
Gives me data points to understand how we're doing, where to diagnose problems. There was a week.
You know, this sort of gut feel that the traditional owners. So that's, again, that almost yeah. feels like cheating, doesn't it? Where you can step in and you can see these problems these owners are having, and you know that you can fix those almost overnight and, you know, double or quadruple the revenue as a result.
Yeah, I think people who are starting to understand this acquisition game, they do think they can come in and, you know, yeah, overhaul things overnight. And they see all these areas of the business that are severely under-optimized. But I can't stress enough, especially in kind of home services, it takes time. You move at kind of a snail. It's not like the startup where you're pivoting here, pivoting there. Everybody's, you know, technically savvy, right? It's taken us a good 2 months now just to implement this software. And there was a hell week or two in that where people
that, yeah.
were not happy, man. People weren't happy. They were having a tough time with it. And things just move a bit slower.
It's just different yeah. dynamics. I mean, stepping into another company, particularly if there's a large staff, then you've got all of the dynamics around, you know, the new broom and the politics, and some guys don't like the fact that there's a new owner. Some guys embrace the new owner. So it's just a different set of, you know, mechanics, uh-huh. I would imagine.
And that's why, like, it's good to come into an acquisition with certain hard skills. Like, it helps if you've managed people, managed a P&L, or kind of business and financially savvy.
Yes.
There's a lot of soft skills as well. For instance, I mentioned you got to be high EQ. That emotional intelligence really has to be kind of through the roof, because at
the end
of the day,
you're just shout at people then.
No, it's yeah, no. yeah, it's all about people, man, and relationships. So you can't be an a-hole, and you got to come in and the first several weeks in this business, I didn't touch a thing. And I made that very clear to people. All I did was I sat and I watched people work and I asked them questions and I typed on my computer and like, this is how things are being done right now. I wanted to understand the business and its people. And I also had to develop trust, right? Yes. I had to develop trust. I got in the vans with the guys. I got in the trenches. I'm, you know, remodeling this house. They see I can work. They see I know the trades. They see I'm not afraid to take out the garbage or like get into a crawl space with spiders and cobwebs. And that respect builds up. And now we're at the stage where they're excited for our weekly meetings when I bring up new things we're implementing.
Do you have to reinvent yourself for every new deal?
Yeah. I was going to say no, but yeah, because every deal is so different. Every culture is different. And you're having to build relationships with all these different types of people. Like, and everybody's different. Everybody has different values. Yes. Every company has different values too. I'd love to be able to just say, here's a blanket values, mission, vision statement I can put on every company we buy. But no, like with this company, through the process of building the relationships here and observing the company, I've started to identify the values that already existed.
But you have to be able to step out and the new owner steps in. So, I mean, are you effectively creating that environment so that the new owner becomes accepted? Because effectively he's being chaperoned by you. You become the trusted entity. So therefore your reflected trust, you know, shines down on the new owner. Is that what has to happen? Otherwise you end up with, you know, failure.
I might just be misunderstanding the
I don't blame you. I have no idea what I was saying. What I was saying is that the importance that you bring is this experience that you have dealing with multiple companies effectively creates a pathway so that the new owner can come in without having to suddenly learn all these skills that you've spent decades polished finessing.
Yes. The thing I like to say here is throughout this whole process, it's part science, right? The part science to this is there is, I think, a systematic way to come in and successfully integrate into an existing culture and create change, right? It's things like you always have that first speech when you buy a business to the team. You know, I'm the new owner and here's kind of where I want to take things. And honestly, people don't care about a lot of what you probably think they do. At the end of the day, they want to know, is my job safe? Yes. Am I going to get paid what I was getting paid? Who's my new boss? It's like, these are the questions that are asked. So the only thing you really need to make clear, and this is the science part of it, is like, hey, everybody here, we're all taking steps forward. Nobody's going to take a step back. You know, I'm not going to completely overhaul certain things. I'm going to look for little incremental changes that just improves people's quality of life. Many of these companies, people don't have benefits. They don't have retirement savings. They don't have a lot of things that more established companies, larger businesses do. So when you come in and implement that, people love it.
If you're co-investing, you don't just fit and forget, you know, to use a plumbing term, I guess. What you're doing is you're there, you're overseeing, you've got a vested interest. So you're continually calibrating the owners and helping to leverage your experience in other business. So the chance of success working with you is going to be a lot higher than if I were to go and try and find a business myself.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And it's not just Quira that people have access to. It's all the other deals that we're involved in as well. Like, you know, if you buy an HVAC company with us, you know, we own several, right? Yes. So you can travel across the US and visit other HVAC companies, talk to their owners and find out how they're doing things. Yes. So you have that sort of support system of, you know, relationships and best practices. I have a network of folks that I found mainly actually through Twitter and through kind of Quira who own plumbing companies. Yeah. And so stepping into this acquisition, I mean, my greatest fear is spending time like doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I haven't done much of that, right? I mean, one of the things I did in this company is we visited our pricing and we did the math backwards to find out here's where we want to go. Here's what that's going to cost. Here's what the overhead looks like. And let's build that into our pricing. That whole system, I didn't really have to figure out. I had other people who'd already been there, done that, who gave me the system behind that. So it just saves a lot of time and energy. And that's why we
exist. The lesson really is just growth comes from working on businesses rather than working in businesses. And the fact that you have all this inventory is because people have got that wrong. They've got burnt out. They haven't grown. Is that one of the headlines that you would agree with?
Oh, dude. Yeah. Because again, this is a unique situation I'm in because I still work, you know, day to day with the current owners. And they are like, we try to have a weekly meeting all together. And it's almost impossible to get them to focus on the business within that meeting with me for 45 minutes. Yes. They're constantly on calls. They're being called here and there. And that's the situation with many of these businesses.
And I think it's time for the Hooked on Startups questionnaire.
Dump. Oh, sweet. I don't know if I got these in advance.
Oh, I hope you didn't, because it's so much more fun.
Perfect.
You know, you realize the questions are actually quite simple. The less preparation, the better, I can assure you.
Perfect. Oh, all right. Please.
And now let me apply my evil laugh. Question one. What is your favorite word?
Oh, pumpernickel.
Oh, that's rather awesome. Okay, 10 out of 10 for that. Question two. What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
A common thread. Much agreement over here. Question three. What are you most excited about right now?
Dude, this deal. I'm working on another personal acquisition right now. It's 10 times larger than the one I just did, and it absolutely scares me to death. But that's going to be it's a big, hairy, audacious goal. So I'm simultaneously scared to death and stoked for it.
Well, fabulous. And question four, then, naturally, what turns you off right now?
Oh, honestly, this is getting really granular. One of the things with these types of businesses, you have a price book that lists all your different services and stuff for customers. It is incredibly handy when you've got that fully built out because you can scale fast.
Yes.
Your techs can be out there, you know, selling. It's decentralized. But man, building that thing out with all the proper costs, and there are thousands and thousands of materials in the plumbing world that are used on jobs, and no job is the same. So digging into that detail, I'm good at it, fortunately, but man, it's like pulling teeth. I've only told that to you and my wife. The team never hears about it.
Yeah, don't worry. No one else is listening, so your secret's safe.
Perfect.
Question number five, if I can survive. What sound or noise do you love?
Ooh, it's going to sound cliche, but my daughter is just starting to find her voice with singing. And she's starting to, you know, hit different pitches and stuff. You know, she's two. So it's just the cutest, most angelic sound. And it's amazing to watch that little personality form. So that's my favorite
sound. And
right,
you know, it goes quickly. And then they end up going, they're like fifth grade, and they come back in a play and you can't stand the sound of it.
I'm sure that's coming.
My next question, number six, what sound or noise do you hate?
Oh yeah, that's an easy one. Speaking of Cocomelon, it's again my daughter. So one of our family members, as almost a joke, they knew exactly what they were doing, got her one of these Cocomelon dolls, like babies, and there's a button on there you press, and it's just super loud, and it's the same three things over and over again. And she's even figured out how to open up the Velcro in the back and take that noise box out, because she likes to press that button. So it's even louder because it's not, you know, muffled.
And this is the sound that has to be surgically removed from your brain.
Pretty much. And it went off a couple times during this interview. And I was like, oh, man, that's just.
No, no one heard it, but I know what you mean. It's that sort of, you know, it causes the hairs on the back of your head to sort of stand up on the back of your neck. Question number seven. What is your favorite curse word?
Can I say it?
Yes. No one's listening. I told you.
Okay, it's just.
That's the best one. I mean,
it's simple, it's cliche or whatever, but
all about the intonation. You've got fuckity fuckity fuck. It's brilliant. You know, it is.
It's true. I've heard some people, like my wife, she doesn't really ever cuss because I just can't take her seriously. It's just like, no, you got fuck.
But it is. I think it's the prime, you know, fuck is the primordial molecule, I think. Upon which
yeah, it's great.
And talking about that, question number eight, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would have loved, you mentioned like in a previous life, you would have loved to be a professional drummer, right? I have often thought, like if I had a second life to live, I would love to try to be a professional snowboarder. I love snowboarding, man. And I would just be one of those couch bums, basically the exact opposite of what I'm doing here. I have no goals or ambitions except to just be on the slopes every day and sleep on somebody's couch at night. Like that's what I do. Or a professional musician, but I definitely tried that, still trying that, still in that world a bit. But yeah, I would have been a snowboarder.
I suppose
bum.
It's the equivalent of surfing, isn't it? Where you just, you know, I know people that just in California, you just all you want to do, because every day is different. Every day has its own set of challenges. They're never the same. Yeah. So I can certainly understand that. And the follow-on question, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh, I don't know if I could ever be an accountant, man. I'm decent with numbers. You have to be in these businesses, but an accountant or CPA or somebody that, you know, just has to do that all day. God bless him.
Next guess is going to be a CPA. It has to be. And I'm sure that his answer is, what profession would you hate? I would hate to be a snowboarder. It's going to be something like that, isn't it? It's
or like a public speaker or something.
Yeah. And my final question then, Kylon, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
People are still talking about you, man.
Get back down there.
Yeah, I'd love to see that, you know, and I'd love it, you know, 10 years after I've walked through those gates to hear the same thing. You know, when it really comes down to it, I just really want to leave some great things and great people behind that remember what I did, right? And I think that's the same for a lot of folks.
So. I think it is the legacy, exactly. Well, Kylon, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you. How do people get in touch with, how do they find out more about you and what you're doing with Acquire?
Yeah, no, please do get in touch. You can always go to acquire.com. That's acquira.com. Or reach out to me personally at kylonginger@gmail.com. That's kylonginger. Or I have a personal website at kylonginger.com that you can go to and find my LinkedIn, find your way to Acquira. And we have some awesome, awesome people at Acquira. They'd love to talk to you as soon as tomorrow. Just get on a call. We can share more of what we do and see if we're the right fit.
And there is also a link to a very good YouTube video with you in a band playing the drums.
That's right. If you go to kylonginger.com, you can hear the band a bit.
Which is brilliant. Thank you once again. Look forward to staying in touch, following your progress. Kylon, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate it, man.